This is from an actual caller into Jim Cramer's Real Money radio show. Jim says, "What's on your mind?" Caller says, "What's on my mind is BTU, Peabody. I started buying it when you first started talking about it. I started getting in around 60. Down to 44, 45, bought some more. Up to 52, bought some. Back down to 44, bought some. What's going on?" Hi, everybody. This is Paul Douglas, Boyer on the Mad Money Machine, show number 38, Unreal Money. And I'll tell you exactly what's going on. I've got a guru, I've got a tool, and I've got Rich.
The Mad Money Machine, nominated as Best Business Podcast at PodcastAwards.com.
Thanks very much, Rich. Oh, man, I've got a lot of stuff to talk about. I'm going to have to strip out all the silences in this file to get it down to size. But I'm not going to strip out this important point, and the point is the Mad Money Machine is proud to be sponsored by Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. You know what they do? They help match people with portfolios. And I encourage you to go out to their website and take a look. There's a wealth of information out there to browse through and learn about and study up on what makes up the best portfolio for the lowest amount of risk. Take their risk capacity survey and benchmark your portfolio. Well, the caller wondered, what is going on with this stock that goes up and then down and then up and then down again? Well, fella, it's called volatility. And if you're going to invest in a single stock, get used to it. And you pay attention to the tool in the crib this show. Hey, only 3 weeks until the Podcast Expo in California. I'm hooked up with the poker tournament with Rob Walsh and Gary Leland. I'm looking forward to that, guys. And if I win just one hand, I'll feel like I've walked away a winner. The other thing about the Podcast Expo is that Ron Moore, the executive producer of Battlestar Galactica, will be giving a keynote address at the Podcast Expo. And he does a podcast, which is basically the director's commentary for each of the Battlestar Galactica episodes. And I have been turned on now to this show. Thank you, Rob Walsh of Podcast 411, for saying it's such a good show and encouraging us to watch it. I have watched it, and I agree, I really enjoy the show. Turning now to other events. Since we last spoke, I have attended my first event in RFK Stadium in Washington, D.C. We saw the Washington Nationals beat the Arizona Diamondbacks in a pretty good game. But man, oh man, that RFK Stadium, that needs to be replaced, which is exactly what I guess the Redskins thought too. And I went to another event in Washington, D.C. the day after Labor Day. We went down to took a tour of the Bureau of Engraving and Printing. Well, I've told you before how I am one who likes to avoid the crowds. Remember on 4th of July when I parked in the neighborhood to get away from it real quickly? Well, our thinking was here that the peak season for the Bureau of Engraving and Printing is between May and August. And, of course, it'll pick up again when kids get back into school and start taking school tours. Well, we hit it just absolutely perfect. We were just about the only people on the tour. Never had to wait in a long line or anything. Would I recommend that you go see the Bureau of Engraving and Printing, however? How do you feel about Xerox machines and looking at the internals of how they work? Well, I recommend that you find a good book or DVD on the Bureau of Engraving and Printing first. And if you're really fascinated by that, then go ahead and go take a look. And then we took the elevator to the top of the Washington Monument. And again, we were lucky to avoid all kinds of lines. Oh, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And also, I forgot to update you on the talk I gave to my neighbor's company. It went really well, I thought. I actually was able to communicate to real human people in a live audience. And I thought I did pretty well. If you'd like for me to come and speak to your company or event or group about podcasting, about Jim Cramer, there are some things I cannot say to you on this show that I'd be happy to tell you about in person for legal or other reasons. Just get me to your location, and I'll be happy to give a talk. More details in the show notes. September is the time for pain in the stock market, they say. last September in October, it sure was. Started out, I guess, the first couple of days of September this year looked pretty painful. We'll see what happens. Can anyone really time the market? Let's dig down deep into the Mad Money email bag. Going back into August 4th, Mria2 writes, I must know, especially after hearing your positive comments regarding Bogle, is Vanguard the king of indexing or does IFA hold the crown in your opinion? If you're a do-it-yourselfer, then you're going to want to use Vanguard. If you just want to hand your money over to somebody and have it do the absolute best that it possibly can, in my opinion, then you're going to want to give it to IFA. Plus, I really do think that IFA can beat a well-constructed Vanguard portfolio by a percent or two over the long term, annually. Here's an email from Atore, A-T-O-R-E. Paul, long-time listener, second-time commenter, says, to be truthful, I'm not sure I'm liking the new Mad Money machine. The IFA push and philosophy isn't really down my alley. I have a 401k at work, which I contribute the maximum allowed. My trading account is just that, a trading account where the goal is to increase the account's bottom line. It is what my wife and I consider mad money, and I really do enjoy it. When I originally subscribed, you were more about examining Cramer stock picks and doing comparisons, etc. You still do, but it's really taken a backseat to the index push. Come on, Gamblers Anonymous? Anyway, maybe the random number generator will choose me, and once I've read the book, I'll have changed my mind. Thanks for the show. Well, I hope you don't have to wait to win a copy. I hope you buy a copy of this book, read it, and then please send me a comment about what you think and whether it changes your mind about trading, especially if you're really trading money that you need. JavDev on August 7th said, great show. I learned of your show from the Street IQ Financial and Business Podcast Registry. I never rely on one show for financial advice. I download your show directly from your site over the weekend. I listen to your show while commuting on a train to and from the Big Apple, usually on Monday afternoon. Please keep the podcast available on your site. I would never sign on to that proprietary iTunes garbage. Oh, well, folks, all of you folks that are listening to this show through the website or through some other podcatcher other than iTunes, I'd like to ask you, would you please use iTunes instead? It'll help boost my subscriber count. And in the end, that's what it's all about, baby. The number of subscribers. K-U-C-K-E-R writes, I have since stopped listening to the Mad Money podcast, and you have really helped me change my thinking on investing. I find your show very educational and entertaining, except for the original songs. I had to fast forward through Stock Pick and Blues. Keep up the great work. Yeah, I know that song was pretty painful to most tender ears, but if you go back and listen to the lyrics, I think it's a pretty good message. Maybe somebody will, maybe I can get one of the country music stars to recut that, do a cover version of that, and maybe we'll make it into the country music top 40. What do you think? Oh, and speaking of music, go out to my website, madmoneymachine.com, and along the right-hand side there's a poll that lets you choose what you think is the best music for the Mad Money Machine show. Shades of the musical group Kiss in that selection by Paradise, called Lady Luck from the PodSafe Music Network. Well, Lady Luck is not what we want to use for our investments now, is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. A 12-step program for active investors. Step 5, manager pickers. My name is Paul, and I'm an active investor. I needed to select an investment for my 401k plan. Go! And based upon the past performance of some of those mutual funds, there were some glorious days. So I picked the one that was the best performer. But it's all over now. I was amazed at how great life was, but it's not anymore. Now I understand the day I picked that fund, lucky days were over. What'd you do? Don't you understand? The day I found you, I was done. But I'll make it through. I just can't accept this situation. I've been sentenced for arrogance. I'm doing my time, paying for the crime. But I'm ready to carry on.
I can recall some glorious days, but it's all over now. I was amazed how great life was, but it's not anymore. And now I understand the day I met you. Lucky days were over. What did you do? And don't you understand the day I met you? I was done, dead, damn, but I made it through. I can't accept this situation. I've been sentenced for arrogance. I've done my time, paid for my crime. Now I'm ready to carry on.
Like stock and time picking, manager picking is a worthless endeavor. However, there are still investors out there who believe they can select an all-star manager or financial guru who can beat the odds. Typically, investors first invest in a star fund run by a star manager when they read about the latest and greatest funds. Then they sell their investments within a few years when they become disenchanted by the fund's shoddy performance. Investors are seldom aware that active funds that have good performance histories are always riskier than the indexes they outperform. Also, outstanding performance histories can be surprisingly fragile. Few investors realize that the most important factor separating a winning performance history from a losing one is the choice of starting and ending dates. Finally, outstanding performance histories don't always reflect taxes or commission loads. Published mutual fund ratings are often pre-tax returns that disguise their true after-tax performance in taxable accounts. If you're trying to pick a mutual fund based upon its past performance, if you're trying to select an investment based upon its star rating, we're here to rescue you. We're here to bring you home.
Is there some way you can rescue me? Some way you can bring me home again? Some way you can rescue me? Rescue me.
Let's play a round of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the marble, and for the selected guru, I'll give you a little background on their investment philosophy. So here we go! And the winner this time on Mad Men Machine Show number 38 is Burton Malkiel. Oh, applause this time. Well, thank you very much. Burton Malkiel, according to Wikipedia. Born August 28th, 1932. As an American economist and writer most famous for his classic finance book, A Random Walk Down Wall Street. Now in its 8th edition, he is a leading proponent of the efficient market hypothesis, which contends that prices of publicly traded assets reflect all publicly available information. And if you have read Jim Cramer's Real Money, and you haven't read A Random Walk Down Wall Street, shame on you. Shame on you. Go get a copy of this book, whether you have to get it from the library or Amazon used books, or heaven forbid you have to buy a brand new copy. Here's what it says out at Amazon about the book. The eternal truth of this updated investment classic, originally published in 1973, is simple. You can't beat the market. Well, technically you can beat the market, but not profitably, because the transaction costs of your brilliant trading will eat up the extra returns. You can also beat the market by pure luck, but you can't deliberately beat the market because you can't predict future stock prices. Then it goes on to say, standing by his notorious claim that a blindfolded chimpanzee throwing darts at the NYSE listings could pick stocks as well as the Wall Street pros, Malkiel advises investors to buy and hold a diversified portfolio heavy on index funds that passively mirror the market, which usually outperform actively managed funds. Well, I've read this book just once so far, and I'd like to go back and read it again. But the thing that hit me over the head like a 2x4 when I read it was this small example. And it's an example of showing the benefits of diversification. He says, imagine there's an island economy with only two businesses. One of them is a resort with tennis courts and golf courses and stuff. The second one makes umbrellas. And as you can imagine, weather affects both of these businesses in a big way. So for example, the umbrella manufacturer makes 50% on your investment in a rainy season. But during the sunny season, it loses 25%. And that's exactly the opposite of the resort owner. The resort owner loses 25% during the rainy season, but makes 50% during the sunny season. And then he says, suppose that on average, one half of the seasons are sunny and one half are rainy. An investor who bought stock in the umbrella manufacturer would find that half the time he earned 50% return and half the time he lost 25%. On average, he'd have a return of 12.5%. That's what you'd call the investor's expected return. And similarly, the resort would produce the same results. Investing in either one of these businesses would be fairly risky, however, because the results are quite variable, and there could be several sunny or rainy seasons in a row. Suppose, however, that instead of buying only one stock, that you put half your money in the umbrella manufacturer and half in the resort owner. In sunny seasons, you'd get a 50% return on half and 25% loss on half, and that would work out to be 12.5%. Rainy seasons, same thing. He says the simple illustration points out the basic advantage of diversification. Whatever happens to the weather, by diversifying investments over both of the firms, an investor is sure of making 12.5% return each year. So it's a sure 12.5% or a not so sure 12.5%. And that's what hit me over the head with the 2x4. There's a lot of other good stuff in this book. I encourage you to go out and get a copy. Congratulations, Bert and Malkiel, for being our guru on Mad Money Machine Show number 38. It's back to school, so here's a tool for your investing education. To gauge risk in your stocks, whether index funds or Crocs, you'll need standard deviation. Sorry for the limerick, and apologies to Lewis Rukeyser. Well, one way to measure risk in your investments is to see how far they swing up and down. If you were to plot a chart of the gains in an investment over some period of time, let's say a monthly gains or yearly gains in an investment, over the long term, that chart might look like a big hump with a small tail off the left representing bad returns, a small tail off to the right representing fantastic returns, and a big hump in the middle representing the bulk of most of the returns in most of the months or years that you're measuring the performance. If you took out a slice in the center of that hump that represented 2/3 of all the returns, well, the distance between the center of that slice and the edge of the slice is the standard deviation. Now, that's a roundabout definition of standard deviation, that's for sure. There's a much more mathematically precise way of calculating a standard deviation. Said another way, let's assume that you looked at the returns on a index fund over, 70 years. It might come out looking like a bell curve, a normal curve, normal distribution with a big hump. And if you were to run that through an Excel spreadsheet, STDEV, you might calculate that the standard deviation of the returns on that investment annually come out to 12%, let's say. That means that 68% of all of the annual returns of that fund are between 12% below its average or mean and 12% above its average or mean. So there's two numbers you need to know about. If the average annual return on the index fund, let's say it's 10%, then 68% of all of the returns are going to be between -2%, or +22%. That 12% is the standard deviation. If you're trying to measure the risk on an investment, therefore, a standard deviation of 4% means that thing doesn't swing around very much. A standard deviation of 50% means that thing's flapping like a flag in a hurricane. I'll have some links in the show notes to this show that take you out to websites that have charts and simple explanations of what standard deviation really means. If you're like me, and I know I was, then you may not know exactly what standard deviation means. I encourage you to live it, love it, and learn it. It's a tool that'll be your friend in measuring your investment risk. Like all other tools I've given you, this one is free. I want to give away another copy of Index Funds, a 12-step program for active investors. In there, you can read more about Step 5 Manager Pickers. You know, I can't give you all this detail in just the 3 short minutes that I've talked about it so far on this show. There's a chart, for example, persistence in 5-year performance of 800 mutual fund managers. It shows the first 5-year period of all 800 funds. It shows, it ranks them and sorts them by the best performing to the worst performing. And you can see it's kind of a downward slope. The top ones on the left and the bottom ones go underneath zero on the right. And then it shows the second 5-year performance of each of those 800 funds in order. And it's an amazing thing to look at. Here's what we're going to do to give one away this week. Being as how this book is all about index funds, I'd like for you to make a comment in the show notes of this show out at madmoneymachine.com and answer a simple question, and you'll be entered in a random drawing to win a copy of this book. Here's the simple question. Name an investment you own and explain to me why that money is not in an index fund or funds. Just so you don't feel too embarrassed, I'll start it off. I own the Dodge & Cox International Fund. The ticker symbol is DODFX. And I guess when I bought that, I just didn't know any better. It's not a horrible mutual fund. I looked it up on Morningstar, and the R squared on it is 92. Remember, anything over 90, I mean, it's pretty close to an index fund. And the beta on it is 1.03, and it matches one of the MCI, Morgan Stanley, EAFE, Europe, Asia, Far East indexes, or it matches even a little bit better the world index. So it's kind of a managed index fund in a sense, and the expenses aren't horrible, so I didn't shoot myself too badly in the foot. It says that the expense ratio is 0.7. But you can find index funds that have an expense ratio of 0.25 easily. Maybe not international funds. And I also have those 5 stocks I mentioned on the previous show. Why am I in those? Well, because I didn't know any better. And I can't wait to get out of them and into some index funds. Like I said, I'll take maybe 2% of my investments and speculate with it. Just to play in the markets, play gambling. Now, I'm not trying to imply that you don't know any better by not being in an index fund. Maybe you've got an investment that has a perfectly good reason for being in it. Or, I don't know. I have no idea what reason you might have for being in some investment other than an index fund. But that's what we're going to find out if you want to win a copy of this book, Index Funds, 12-Step Program for Active Investors. I look forward to reading your comments. If you aren't registered at madmoneymachine.com, simply go out to the website, click on the register button there, And you'll enter your email address, and I will not spam you to death. Maybe a handful of spams in the course of a year is all I will do. And I won't sell your email address to anybody else, so feel free to sign up. Once again, the simple question is, name an investment you own and explain why that money is not in an index fund. Let's go check up right now on Leonard the Wonder Monkey and see how he's doing against Jim Cramer out at KramerWatch.org. Well, I'm bringing it up. It says the score is that Leonard was right 49.25% of the time and Cramer was right 49.44% of the time. It looks about a dead heat there. And how are we doing in the Portfolio Smackdown? Well, we've definitely lost some ground in the past 3 days. ETF portfolio was up to almost 10%. Now it's 7.4%. Cramer's down to negative 4.3%. I've got a new analysis for you of some Cramer picks. What I did is I went back to all of Jim's picks, Jim's featured stocks in January. And I say all. I have removed some of them. Some of them are no longer companies. Some of them are foreign companies that I just don't want to take the time to look up their stock prices on. I've got all these prices in a spreadsheet. They automatically update with that tool number one, I think, from the first show, the Excel plugin. If you go out to my website under the Tools tab, you'll see how to get a plugin that automatically updates stock prices in Microsoft Excel. So I've got in here about 71 stock picks that Jim featured on his show in January. I took an average of all their performance, and it looks like the average of all of those is down 4.2%. So those are stocks since January until about Thursday, September 7th. And that's down 4.2%, all of them. The worst one in there, Neurocrine Biosciences, NBIX, it's off 84.3%, along with Marvell Technology down 71%, XM Satellite Radio down 56%, Broadcom down 51%. But some big winners, Zoltec, Z-O-L-T, up 139%. Allegheny Technologies, that was his stock of the year, right? 66% gainer. PW Eagle, 56% gainer. And Sarenza Micro Devices, up 48%. Big swings in these individual stocks. I thank you so much for joining me this week. Once again, after the disclaimer, I'll play the song called Lucky Days by Naked Gun, available from the PodSafe Music Network. That was part of the Step 5 Manager Pickers. If you want to be an active part of the Mad Money Machine, go out to madmoneymachine.com and up at the top right of the website, you'll see action items. There you can click and find out all the fun things you can get involved with the Mad Money Machine. One of them would be I ask you to vote for my show at Podcast Alley. What's that do? Not a whole lot, really, but just helps bump me up in the vote count. That's all there is. That's all it is, and that's all that matters, isn't it? The vote count. Coming up on next week's show, I'm going to talk about something you'll really want to find out about in Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine in October that's coming out. And I'm also going to get into the real meaning of the Petersburg payout and what it means for your investments. Until next time, this is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes knowing how standard deviation works to make a Mad Money Machine. I'll see you next time. And visit our sponsor, Index Funds Advisors, at IFA.com, helping investors succeed by matching people with portfolios. You've been listening to Paul Douglas Boyer's Mad Money Machine. Some music played on this program was made possible by the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Mad Money Machine is not affiliated with Jim Cramer, CNBC, Real Money, TheStreet.com, or anyone else, really. I may have long or short positions on some or all of the investments discussed on this show. Although the information discussed on this program is believed to be reliable, neither I nor the sponsors of this program make any representations or warranties whatsoever as to its accuracy or completeness. Nor do we assess, verify, or guarantee the suitability or profit of any particular investment, and you should not rely solely upon this program for purposes of transacting securities or other investments. Opinions expressed by me and any of my guests are current opinions only and subject to change without notice. Thanks for listening. Join me again next time for more of Paul Douglas Boyer's Mad Money Machine. What?
Because we suck.
And now I understand the day I met.